Welcome, my friend. You are listening to Read Clean YA with CJ, the podcast for teens and young adults who want to explore exciting worlds, deep themes, and epic stories without the objectionable content. I'm your host, award-winning young adult author CJ Malacy, and in this episode, we are going to dive into an author interview with young adult author Abigail O'Brien. Abigail O'Brien began writing early in her life, but didn't get serious about it until the end of high school. She went on to earn a creative writing degree and graduate from the NYU Publishing Institute, and even married another writer. Her writing, much like her life, is filled with curses, adventures, and happily ever afters. When not writing, you can find her playing D&D with her friends or plying them with experimental baked goods, trying to do entirely too much in her garden, and hanging out with her husband and two children in their century-old cottage in the shadow of the Wasatch Range. Her love of fairy tales is evident in her debut novel, Iron Rose, which is a dark YA reimagining of Beauty and the Beast. Abigail, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yes, I'm so excited to have you. And let me just say, I love that you give your friends experimental baked goods. That is fantastic and something that everyone needs that friend in their life, you know, because I'm sure there's great moments and really bad ones in that process.
There are. I've been very grateful. I've been able to like hone a lot of cooking things because people were willing to eat the not so great ones.
Yes.
So thanks to my D&D group over the years, I've become a much better cook.
I love it. I love it. I would love to hear all about that because I love cooking. But we are talking about books today, not cooking, which is even more exciting. So today we're talking about The Iron Rose, which is your debut novel. So I am so excited. I have heard amazing things about this book. My friends have not stopped talking about it. It is going to be so fun to talk with you about it today. If you could, would you mind sharing with our listeners a little bit about your story?
Of course. So Iron Rose, like you said, is a dark YA reimagining of Beauty and the Beast, and it is dual POV. So for all of the people who want the behind the scenes of what the other characters are thinking, this is one of those books. But you mainly follow Lydia, who is sort of the Belle character, except for she is the leader of a rebellion in the midst of a occupied country, and she is trying to take down a tyrant at any cost.
Love that so much because tyrants need to be taken down. So that's always a fun start to a story, right? Makes you want to root for the character.
Yes. So yeah. Lots of action.
Yes. And we love action on this podcast. 99% of the books that we talk about on here are very action packed. So I feel like your book fits right in perfectly well with that. And I am a huge fan of Beauty and the Beast. I always loved that fairy tale growing up. And it is one of my favorites. I think one of the things I've always loved is Belle's library, which I'm not sure if that's in your book or not, but I think that was the original reason I got into Beauty and the Beast. But I think the story itself is so much fun. So was that why you wanted to write this story? Because you love Beauty and the Beast? Or was there something else that was the impetus for what sparked the beginning of this story?
I adore Beauty and the Beast. The short of it is I loved the Disney Beauty and the Beast, like the animated one from the 90s, all growing up. But there were parts of it that even as a child, I was like, hold up, I don't feel like that really checks out. And so this story originally was born out of me answering those questions that I had and thinking about like, well, how would it really be? Like if the ruler disappeared, if someone cursed a child, what kind of person would they be and what kind of motivations would they have? And what would happen when that ruler disappeared and the person who cursed them was left unchecked in the country? And what kind of person could become friends with a beast, let alone fall in love with them? So those are the questions that I originally was just sort of messing around with. And then eventually I was like, this is a book. I need to make this a book.
Yes. I love when the what if questions become this thread that unravels a whole story world that you just didn't see coming when you first started asking them. You know, it sounds like for you, it was more of a, all right, I don't like X, Y, and Z about Beauty and the Beast, and it just doesn't track. It doesn't make sense. So let's see why I don't like it. And let's see how we can fix it and make it something that makes more sense in my brain. Because it's true, there are a few things in that story that, you know, it is concerning that she falls in love with her captor. You know, that's a problem. So, you know, that's problematic. We don't really want to do that in real life. But there are other elements that are great and iconic things that we love about that story. And so how can you take the great things and then explore the more difficult themes and end up bringing a whole new story to life? So I love that. And like I said before, I am a big fan of Beauty and the Beast. So I think that's a fun fairy tale to spin off of no matter what. One of the questions I usually ask is, are there movies or books similar to yours? Obviously, that answer is pretty easy to start with Beauty and the Beast. But do you have any other movies or books that you think also fit just the overall feel of your story? Because it does sound different than the original fairy tale, obviously, tyrants and hunting them down, all that fun stuff.
Yes, absolutely. Hunger Games. So one way that I do talk about Iron Rose is basically like, it's Beauty and the Beast, but if Katniss were Belle. So there's that. And then Mary E. Pearson, her books. And this is a bit of an older one, but Graceling by Kristen Cashore. Basically anything that anything that's gritty and action-packed, but there's, like, still some love.
Yes. Love it. So when you were writing this story, you said your main character, Lydia. So Lydia is the one that most of the story is from her point of view. Do you find that you enjoy her character the most when you're writing, or do you have another one that maybe surprised you or is another character that you really love as well?
Oh, that's kind of hard, because that's different than, like, what my favorite character is.
That's true. Well, you can also answer the question, who is your favorite character?
Well, I think the answers are different. Like, I think my favorite character is Lydia, but when I get to write from the Beast's perspective, his name is Adam. When I get to write from Adam's perspective, it feels delicious.
Okay.
It's just like, I think it's because I'm such a sucker for like some of the tropes in there are like he falls first, like tending each other's wounds, that kind of stuff. All clean, but still those fun tropes. And Lydia, very much love is in any form is very like not in the picture. So in the Beast's perspective, you get to see her in a totally different light because she is like burdened and calculating and a leader, and she like carries the world on her shoulders. Seeing her from his perspective just feels like he sees her like a beautiful flower. Not that she's not capable, but like he sees the parts of her that she doesn't think are valuable and like adores that. And I love getting to write that. But really, it's because I'm like getting to explore a part of Lydia that she doesn't see in herself.
Mm. And isn't that the best romance when you see in real life or in a story when the characters, for in this instance, bring out something in each other that or see something in each other that the other person doesn't necessarily notice right away. And it's fun to watch that explored, because when that person sees something deeper than everyone else, you're like, okay, you care enough about the heart to look for, you know, these jewels that are in this person. And I love that kind of story. It just shows a romance that I think is more enjoyable to follow through a story, because you're like, oh, you care about this person on a much deeper level than just surface things, you know?
Yeah, which I think one of the reasons why I always love Beauty and the Beast is because, like, that's the requirement. Like, at the very baseline, any kind of retelling, the Beast is never, like, hot. And, like, right. You know, it's something where it's, like, you have to be engaging on, like, a personality level from the get-go. Because, like, there's the physical thing is, like, the most problematic.
Yes. Yes, it's so true. I love that. So one of the things we talk about on this podcast is the deeper themes in the story. And I feel like just from hearing the beginning of you talking about this book, I can already imagine that there are many different types of themes woven throughout, even just that one that we just said, physical appearance not being paramount, but needing to look at the heart. But what is a theme that you found or even intentionally put into your story that has shown up now in the finished version of the book?
So because it is dual POV, I find that there are really like each character has their own particular theme. And so with Lydia, even though love and hope are deeply woven through the whole story. I would say for her, it's really a question of what is real strength. Because she, at the beginning of the book, she is operating from a place of being shut down emotionally because just basically there's been like so many hard things that have happened to her and things that she hasn't been able to prevent that she's like working so desperately to prevent for other people. For her, like strength is being able to like show up and fight against this tyrant and win. And then through her relationship with Adam, and as things go on, it begins to shift. And she begins to see that, like, maybe her femininity isn't going to be something that kills her. that it can be a strength, and that she can, like, begin to tap into this other part of her that she has locked away for so long. And so for her, it's the question of like, what's really strength? And some of the answer is like being able to be open to giving and receiving love is strength.
Yeah.
For Adam, it's really about the question of shame. So shame is what locks him up in the ruins where he lives, not any physical force. And it takes Lydia showing up and, you know, just not having any of it. But also legitimately like talking through some of these things. And as they come into the light, their power kind of disappears. And so something I would really want readers to take away from the book would be that their value is not attached to the outcomes of their efforts. And that like love breaks shame. Like shame can lock you up. But that's not where you have to stay. Like, that's not the end of the story. There's always a new beginning after that, if you let people in.
Mm. Those themes are so powerful. And I think woven together can be such an incredible message for readers, really, because it's easy to think strength, for example, with Lydia, is just marching into the battle and facing the most wicked people and, you know, shooting them or cutting them open with a sword or whatever, you know, might be happening in that story world. And it can be easy to think that that is strength. But really, at the end of the day, I think it does take more strength to open up your heart and let people in and allow love to be in your life on any level, right? Like whether it's a romantic love, but also familial love or love with friends, it all requires a vulnerability that requires strength. Because until we're willing to open up our hearts and let people in, we can't fully, I think, embrace all we were created to be either. Because God didn't make us to live in our own little bubble, right? He created us to have others in our lives, and He is love. So if God is love, and there must be a strength in character that comes from opening up our hearts to love as well. And shame is, I think, something that binds more people than maybe we even realize. You know, it is a prison that will shackle people silently sometimes, you know, for their whole lives if it's not broken down. But it is true, love can break shame. And in Jesus, right, we have no condemnation in Christ. So we don't have to live in that guilt or shame. And I think on a big, huge perspective level, right, ultimately, we have experienced through the love of Christ, love that breaks shame and guilt. And I think that can then also be something we then live out in our lives toward other people. And to see that happen in a story is even just a reflection of a greater story, right? That story that, okay, there is a love that breaks guilt. There is a love that breaks shame. And ultimately, you do not have to live in that bondage your whole life, even though it feels like you do when you're in it. You know, if we're ashamed of something, it can keep you up all night just being guilt-ridden over it. But when we let love into our lives, it can break that shame when it's the right kind of love, when it's true love that is sacrificial and giving and thinks of others more than itself, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Those themes are beautiful. And it's neat to see how layered your story is just in talking about it. There's the obvious one of physical appearance, which I feel like, okay, that's obvious. We shouldn't just think about people for physical appearance sake, and there needs to be relationship building and all of that stuff. But then to go even deeper and see these other themes, like, it's exciting. It makes me want to read the book even more. And you already mentioned this, but what the reader would take away. And I also really appreciated what you said about that and like wanting your readers to come away with some of these truths, like sewn into their heart in a deeper way as well, which is also really important. But I always love it when a story can not just be an escape from my world and my craziness and my life, but also speak to my heart in a way that I needed to be spoken to, and then go back into my crazy, busy world with some new truth that I can then share with others, or also just have a deeper strength in my own life because I've learned something in a different way. The stories, though, are always born out of somebody who has a life outside of writing books. So when you're not writing your stories and thinking about your fairy tale retelling adventures, what do you like to do?
I spend a lot of time gardening. I have been rewilding our property alongside my husband. So he really likes different types of insects, and I really like gardens. And so we've been teaming up basically to turn what was like a, I guess it's a third of an acre, but it was like just grass. Uh-huh. And we live in Utah, which is a desert for anyone who doesn't know. And so just grass is actually really bad for that area. So we've been bringing in lots of native plants, but also just making sure that like we have strips of like tall grass and that kind of stuff. Like it's still an area that like it's not just like wilderness. Like we're curating it. Sure. And we're also growing like so many vegetables I'm very excited about, and many, many roses. But it's been so cool to see. It's been creating a microclimate, which we've been hoping for. But it just means that like it's cooler, not like in temperature. I mean, I think also in looks, but sure. It's cooler in temperature in our yard than it is in our neighbor's yard. You can tell the difference.
Wow.
And so I think that's amazing. And we've been getting new varieties of insects every year, because there's these cycles where it's like there has to be enough food. And so there's like one year we had like thousands of grasshoppers. And then the next year we had significantly less because there had been a full season of abundance. And so their predators then moved in the next season. And so we've just been seeing that. And so like that is so cool. And I also take a lot of inspiration from nature just in my D&D, but as well as like when I wrote Iron Rose, I was in high school and college. I am now in my 30s. So there was a long period of time where nothing happened with Iron Rose. And in that time, I got into gardening. So So I feel like a lot of the influences of what I was just talking about are apparent in what I am currently writing, not so much in Iron Rose. But yeah, the best monsters come from nature, because if you look closely enough, it's pretty terrifying.
Right. And then you just blow that little bug up and make it 20 feet tall. And you're like, that is the scariest thing I could imagine. 5 feet tall and it would be terrifying.
Absolutely. Or just like the things where it's like, oh, quadriceps, they're horrifying. And it's just a thing that's real in real life. And yeah, it seems like it would be a fantasy curse, but turns out it's just a parasite in real life.
Oh my goodness. I think gardening is amazing. I love gardens. I love fresh fruits and vegetables. I kill every plant I try to cultivate. It is a problem. My mom gave me an orchid not long ago. Half of it is now dead. I tried following her instructions, but it is not alive any longer. I've killed succulents, all of it. I just can't keep anything alive. And so I'm always so impressed, and I love visiting people's houses who have beautiful gardens and all of this stuff. But my terribleness with it, not a great word use, but anyway, it is so clear to all of my family that I was in my cousin's wedding last year, and she gave all of her bridesmaids these cute little succulents. She gave me a fake one, and I cheered. I was so happy. Everyone else got a real one. Mine was fake. And I was like, thank you so much. So I love it, but it is just not in me. I think I just get too busy with other things, and I totally forget what I need to do. So I am so impressed that you have like been rewilding, as you called it, your backyard, and making it this haven that is actually cooler than other places, literally, because in a desert, I imagine any kind of cooling temperature is appreciated.
So. Yeah. I got super into it when I learned about sky rivers, which once again, sounds like fantasy.
That.
It's a real thing. Yeah. Sky rivers are basically like currents of water vapor in the sky. And so like the rainforest, that's why like the rainforest being chopped down affects different parts of the world. It's because the water vapor that creates that sky river goes across the ocean and like is supposed to, you know, go across some of North America and that kind of stuff. And so as the trees get depleted, like that depletes the sky river because of transpiration from the leaves. So there's just stuff like that where I'm like, it's just endless inspiration because like, how cool does a sky river sound? If anyone wants to write about a sky river, go forth, please do it. And then let me know so I can read about it because I think that would be dope.
It sounds like the coolest thing ever. Like, that is so cool. I've never even heard of that. But again, my terribleness with gardening kind of makes sense that I don't know a lot about any of this stuff. But yeah, that is fascinating. So you're getting inspired through all of these different elements. And maybe one day you'll write the book with a sky river in it.
It would be real cool.
You know,
I would love to do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So gardening. I do a lot of gardening. We also do a lot of like hosting of game nights, like board games, and we do D&D. And yeah, that's, and then I'm a stay at home mom with two small children. So, you know, that's every other aspect of my life feels like.
Yes. Yes. I'm sure they keep you very busy with your hands full. So, but that's wonderful. I think when we have other things that we enjoy doing and exploring and seeing story ideas get opened up in new ways that we never would have expected otherwise. So I like hearing what authors like to do outside of writing because we cannot write all day. I can't anyway. My brain would explode. But so, the other things we do make our stories richer and fuller. So I love that. And sky rivers are going to be on my mind for a while now, let me just say. So as we are starting to wrap things up for today, could you share with our listeners where they can connect with you and find Iron Rose and, you know, hear more about what you're doing in your writing?
So if you want more day-to-day updates, then Instagram is the best spot. My handle is Abigail_O'Brien_author. And if you would like less frequent updates, but the occasional free books and definitely more in-depth and sneak peek kind of updates, that would be my newsletter. And you can sign up for that on my website, which is www.authorabigailobrien.com. And I would love to have you. As a small author, I will just say that each individual who joins me on my journey really has input and has impact, and I care a lot about you guys. So if you're looking to feel a little bit more efficacy in your life, then come join me because I will be so excited about you individually. This has probably been my favorite and most unexpected part of my writing journey, is just the beautiful connections that I have been able to create with readers. And there have just been so many great connections, and I have appreciated them so much. They have filled my heart, and hopefully I have also given people something to smile about. So please join me. That would be wonderful.
Yes. And I'll have links to your website and your Instagram in the show notes so listeners can grab those and find you very easily. And I always highly recommend being on an author's newsletter because I think it is the best way to see the deeper behind the scenes, like you said, sneak peeks and all the fun things. And I love it too. It was something I didn't expect either with when I started my author journey, but I've loved connecting with readers and hearing what they think about my stories and hearing what's going on in their life even. It's so fun getting those responses to emails or posts on Instagram. And so, yes, I think that's wonderful. And I do encourage all of you to connect with Abigail and hear what's going on and grab The Iron Rose.
You can get it from Amazon or Barnes & Noble. But also, if you don't already know this, you can go to your local indie bookstore, and if you just request it at the counter or on their website, they will be able to order it in for you, and you will be able to support your local bookstore and me at the same time.
Yes, that tip is always one of my favorites. So yes, do that. It is a great way to support all the small businesses, really, a small business author and a small business bookstore, and every person in that circle will appreciate you for it. So definitely recommend it. But Abigail, thank you so much for being on Read Clean YA with CJ. It was wonderful getting to chat with you today.
Thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Abigail O'Brien. If you are looking for a fairy tale retelling about Beauty and the Beast with lots of action and romance woven throughout, then you will love The Iron Rose. As a quick note for young or sensitive readers, this book does have some scenes of intense action and violence that could be scary for anyone who isn't used to that kind of thing or doesn't like a lot of real intense action. So please be aware of that as you pick up this story, but it is an excellent read and one that I think you will enjoy if you like epic adventures and the Beauty and the Beast feel in a book. It definitely has that vibe. So you will love that in this story. Next time on Read Clean YA with CJ, I will be talking with Millie Florence about her new middle grade release, and it is a fun conversation that I am sure you are going to enjoy, so don't forget to tune in 2 weeks to hear that episode. Thank you so much for listening to Read Clean YA with CJ. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend so they can discover exciting, clean, young adult books too.